questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network from the studio of Fine Music 102.5. We will be bringing you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on fatherhood and masculinity topics. I'm Bill Cable, and our guest today is Dean Mason, who is the author of the book Daddy's OK. Dean experienced separation and divorce in the late 1990s and continues to live with its effects. But the main influence on Dean was that he wanted to do something about it and to help people get over this this trauma of family breakdown. Dean began as a volunteer with Dads in Distress Support Services in 2004, and he devoted a substantial amount of his time to growing DIDS peer support groups, and this led to him being elected chairman in 2010, of being national chairman of DIDS. Hello, Dean, and welcome to the program.
Hello, Bill. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks, Dean. And your book is called Daddy's OK. I guess my first question is, there's no question mark in the title, but are daddies OK?
Well, the subtitle is very important too, Bill, and it reads, Father's Stories of Separation, Divorce and Rebuilding. So the title was chosen because we really wanted to give a strong affirmation that although, you know, getting separated, getting divorced can be a very debilitating and very difficult experience, most of us do get through it. Most of us are okay. And there's a lot of things in the media. There's a lot of, we hear a lot of extreme situations where men are often making wrong choices. And that does set up a perception in the public's eye that, you know, dads are not okay. So I felt very strongly that Daddy's Okay was a really good title to express this, not just belief, but experience I have, not just myself of being a father, but many, many fathers that I've worked with over the years, that really they're not just okay, they're actually doing really, really well and very committed to making a great positive contribution to the world.
Yes, well, you are on the front line in when providing the DIDS service, and you've seen it at the individual level. You also look at the macro level, and at one stage you ask the question, is society itself beginning to decay? And I guess you'd look at the UK riots as one example of that. But it is a major problem in our society, isn't it?
Look, there's no question about that. And there's been a lot of research and now political leaders, President Obama, Prime Minister Cameron, have been referencing this in their speeches, you know, the problem of fatherlessness, the huge growth in single-parent families, and the well-documented social fragmentation that seems to cluster around those demographics. Of course, there are many, many successful stories of single parents, but the sad truth is that the difficulty we have as a society of holding a family together, of a family being able to grow through all of the ups and downs of what it means to go through life as a family unit, are just not there, not as strongly as they used to be. And unfortunately, we see it most, I think, in teenagers and teenagers at risk, homelessness, and these types of things where it's just clear that, you know, the family unit has not been strong enough to hold these kids in the grasp of the family home.
Yes, and it just makes your book so important, doesn't it? Because it is a major part. Well, it is us. It's our society. It's the most important question you can perhaps address is how to make families work.
Well, look, what I really wanted to do with this book was to to remind people and to give people the opportunity to really understand that they are not alone, right, when they go through this experience. Because we're really talking about one of the most extreme forms of human suffering. Now, that's a big statement, okay? Mm-hmm. I know that's a big statement. But having worked with so many people over the years, and, you know, we talk about trauma, what I've learned is that when you experience trauma or I experience a trauma, it is the trauma that we know, right? And you cannot compare my trauma with yours or with anybody else's. It's a terrible thing that we have experienced and that we have that we may still be dealing with. So with this book, telling the stories of 14 men going through this type of not such happy experience of separation and divorce, I really wanted to map out how these 14 men traveled through the journey of discovering that, hey, we're in serious trouble here, and then, boom, we've actually separated, and I don't know how I can live with this. This is really difficult. And then finally getting through that stage and actually, getting back on your feet and doing stuff the way you'd like to do it. By simply telling these stories, we're giving people the opportunity to really experience that they're not alone and to give them confidence to reach out to others who might understand a bit about what they're going through, because the most typical sort of statement we hear people say when they're going through something really terrible in their life is, I just feel so alone. Yes. Nobody seems to understand me or what I'm going through. So certainly the work of Dads in Distress Support Services and many, many good agencies around the country are really trying to give men in particular that assurance that they don't need to be alone.
Yes, and you've got 14 stories, as you mentioned, and storytelling is very important to DIDS. I'd have to say that of those, in working through those 14 stories, I think everyone can identify with some part of some of those 14 stories. And I particularly like the way you summarise what you've just been saying there when you talk about life, a life's journey moment. That's a realisation that I think comes to you when you face this trauma, that perhaps it's a way of dealing with it if you put it down to being part of life's journey.
Well, I think this is one of the key lessons that many of us have learnt, and that is life never goes the way we plan it or the way we expect it. And but when those things happen that really feel like a kick in the guts and really take us out of any sense of what we understand to be healthy, normal, the right way of living, like when we're really catapulted out of that space, if we don't see it as a learning opportunity, we are going to suffer much, much more than we have to. And unfortunately, a lot of people really struggle with that. A lot of people really struggle with the hurt and the pain, especially when it's a generational thing. If their parents have been through it or they've had other early life experiences that have not been good, it can be very, very hard to stand back and say, this is a great learning experience, when in fact it's hell to get through. But at some point, by reaching out to those who can show some positive attitude, who can give you some practical help to help with the very practical things that you're going through in this domain of family separation, and there are many of those, Bill.
Yes.
Then you can start getting a sense of being actually connected with others and seeing that others have gotten through this. There are many who've gotten through this in a positive way. And by looking at it as a learning experience is certainly one of the key tips.
Yes, and we're speaking with Dean Mason on his book, Daddy's Okay. We're going to take a short musical break now, and this is an ethereal piece of music from our own Gurumul from his album, Rakala. And welcome back to Dad's on the Air. Dean, we're speaking with Dean Mason, the author of Daddy's Okay. And Dean, we were just talking about life's journey moment. And your book is actually divided into three major sections. I have to say I particularly like the eyes opening section because even just the headings look very familiar. The first one being, oh no, then things were okay once, let's try again, then what the hell, and then this is screwed. And I think perhaps the words might be interchanged with others in the actual experience.
But, Bill, I have to share a funny experience with you, which I know your audience will appreciate. When I first wrote this, I did not use those words.
I suspected that.
There were some four-letter words throughout those chapter headings, and I'm not a person who swears a lot, right? I generally don't. I have my moments, but it's not my everyday, you know, language. However, when I was trying to come up with a chapter heading to best describe that moment when you discover, you realize that your whole life as a married father has just come crumbling down. Like, it is so shocking. There are a few words that can really capture the depth of that shock, you know? So I really toyed with those chapter headings, and I just said, no, I've got to submit them the way I wrote them because they are true to the experience. But the editors, in their much greater wisdom than mine, said, no, we really can't do that. We need to change them. And so we've changed them. But you're quite right.
I think you still get the sense. The words are, I think they're very accurate words. And really, I think you hear this a lot in dealing with men, but it's the it'll never happen to me thing that's suddenly knocked down when you get yourself in these situations, isn't it?
Oh, that's so true, isn't it? You know, and because we are raised, to get on with it and to make the most of what we have and to endure hardship, endure difficulties, and just keep pushing on and keep forging ahead. And when we've done that, when we feel that we've done that, and we've done it in a relationship, and whether it's been one full of love or difficult, we still take pride in that achievement. Yeah, you know, we've gotten here as a couple, as a family, and you know, it's good. And sure, we all have rocky times, but you know, the man thing is, we're going to get through this. We are going to get through this. But the sad truth is, and I mentioned this in the book, Bill, and many of your listeners will know this, but quite often, when the man has come to the realization that the relationship has ended, the woman has already done her grieving.
Yes. Are women better planners than we men are?
Oh, Bill, I don't know. I think they are probably better planners for their emotional well-being. I think that's probably true. They, in most of the stories in the book, the women were actually trying quite hard for some time to bring their man to a point of understanding what their real issue was, what the woman's real issue was, right? And we as men are not always that quick to get that. And quite often, you know, when a family's under immense financial pressure or health pressure or all sorts of pressures, you know, when you're suffering that emotional pressure of just feeling like you're completely isolated, you're not being listened to, you make decisions. And women tend to make those decisions better and earlier than men, in my experience, and certainly the experience of these cases in the book.
Yes, Dean, I think it's important to note that your book is in no way a criticism of an overall criticism of women or anything like that, but you feel with those 14 stories, you get to know the people, you can understand where they're coming from and the problems that they have to deal with.
Bill, I really appreciate you raising that, because what I'd like to say is that this is such not a gender issue. And what I mean by that is that we now know many, many women who are in the same situation as the man in these stories in Daddy's OK. And these are women who have found themselves to be displaced from the family home and from the family unit through a separation experience. So the father has retained full contact with the children and full care of the children, and for some reason the mother has found herself on the outside. Now, 80% of the time it's the man, and they're the stories that I've captured. But, you know, we now have mums in distress running out in Sydney, and there's no doubt that when a man or a woman is in this situation of being displaced from the family unit, having difficulty seeing their own children, having enormous financial pressures thrust upon them by government agencies, often being investigated and having lots of, you know, very clinical things being questioned of them about psychological well-being, about their, you know, all their behaviours, it's very, very unsettling. So this book unashamedly captures the experiences of 14 men, but I try to make the point many times through it that this can be equally true of a woman when she finds herself the one no longer part of the family unit.
Yes, and at the end of the book, you suggest areas for improvement. What do you see as the biggest problem in from the society point of view in causing these family difficulties?
Bill, have we got the next 24 hours to...
Well, I was going to steer you towards one, and that was the Child Support Agency.
Oh, gee, okay, that's a leading prompt. Look, no, I don't support that view. The Child Support Agency has one of the most difficult jobs to do, along with the Family Law Court. So we all know, and we accept as a society, that parents will do all they can to defend their own children. Now, when you have one parent versing another parent in defence of their children, but each with a different approach of how that should be done, who's going to step in the middle of that? Nobody wants to, but a few agencies have to, including the Child Support Agency. The second thing I'd like to say is that as a society, we all accept that women and children are the first to be protected when there's danger. And in the book, I call this the Titanic effect. So when the Titanic went down, there weren't enough lifeboats for everybody, and they made a decision that women and children will be saved first. Now, that is still true today as a society. Now, because the majority of men are the breadwinners, even today, even though it's changing, it tends to be the mother who is the recipient or the payee in the child support process. And of course, the Child Support Agency is administering their laws, their policies, their procedures, which they are bound to do. They are, however, very blunt instruments, and Dads in Distress, along with many other agencies around the country, have been advocating for many years for those instruments of the CSA to be made more compassionate, more caring, more responsive to each family's real needs and the children's real needs, and not to be rolling out some blunt formula that doesn't take into account many, many situations.
Dean, I'm going to have to be blunt now. We're running out of time, unfortunately, but could you just tell us, you've picked a song, why you've picked the song, and we might have to go out on that choice of music.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've chosen The Special Two by Missy Higgins, and in this song, I just love her soulful lyrics and tunes, but she has two great lines. One is, You make boundaries you'd never dreamed to cross, and if you happen to, you wake completely lost. And that's so true of the stories in this book. But then she says, someone old once said to me, lies will lock you up with truth the only key. And in Dads in Distress, we have a great motto, which is there are three sides to every story, his, hers, and the truth. And somewhere on our journey, we get to discover what that truth is. So I take my hat off to Missy Higgins for singing a theme that resonates with Dads in Distress.
Well, thank you, Dean Mason, the author of Daddy's Okay. And I want to thank New Holland Publishers, who have given us a couple of copies of the book to give away to lucky listeners. So go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. Send us an email telling us where you heard the show, and we'll be in touch. And if you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. Now, here's Missy Higgins.
I've hardly been outside my room in days, 'cause I don't feel that I deserve the sunshine's rays. The darkness helped until the whiskey wore away, and it was then I realized the conscience never fades. When you're young, you have this image of your life, that you'll be scrupulous and one day even make a wife. And you make boundaries you'd never dream to cross, and if you happen to, you wake completely lost. But I will fight for you, be sure that I will fight until we're the special two once again. And we will only need each other, we'll bleed together, our hands will not be tied to hold another's, 'cause we're the special two. And we can only see each other, we'll breathe together, these arms will not be tied to need another's, 'cause we're the special. Someone old once said to me, the lies will lock you up with truth the only key. But I was comfortable and warm inside my shell, and couldn't see this place could soon become my hell. So is it better to tell and hurt, or lie to save their face? Well, I guess the answer is don't do it in the first place. I know I'm not deserving of your trust from you right now. Oh, but if by chance you change your mind, you know I will not let you down, 'cause we were the special two, and we'll be again. Over me like a doctor looking for disease or something that could ease the pain, but nothing cures the hurt you bring on by yourself. Just remembering how we were.